Hello, I'm Kenny Pasenik-Linden with Radio Free Palmer. Joining me via phone is Libertarian Alaska U.S. Senate candidate Scott Kohlhaas. Thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
So we have a general theme to our questions today. We have four questions, but our general theme is how do you work with others? So to give a bit of background, both nationally and here in Alaska, there seems to have developed a more than usual political polarization, resulting in gridlock and decisions made by use of power that isn't always backed by a majority of citizens. So jumping right into our first question, how do you view the present state of government and how do you work with others of different perspectives, both within and without your party?
Well, the government is growing. That's the present state of government as I see it. Ever since the end of World War II, we've had a privileged position, but the government has taken advantage of that and become too large and too intrusive. It's become an empire, and resources have been used to wage unjust wars of aggression. It's completely out of hand. That's where government has gone, and I'm willing to work with all sorts of different groups to try and stop that, to build coalitions. And I think part of my life is that I live here in Anchorage and I'm a political consultant, and so I haven't had a lot of time to work within my own party here. I've been a member of the Libertarian Party since 1978. This will be my 36th year. But those are my roots. I would be willing to work with anyone to stop the growth of government. And I think I've proven that through my work as a political consultant. One of the contracts I've had was working with the Yes on Two campaign, which became the Yes on Two campaign, the legalization of marijuana in Alaska. And it's a difficult group to bring together, an eclectic group, but we were able to gather 45,000 signatures and place that issue on the ballot. And I'm proud of that. And there are other groups that I've worked with that prove that I can work with others. Now, but let's look at, to me, the state of government is growing as opposed to stagnating. If there was gridlock, if there was real gridlock, then I might not be opposed to that, because I don't want to see the government continue to grow and continue to do the things that it's doing. It's unrestrained growth. And so maybe a little gridlock wouldn't be a bad thing. Right, what we have right now is the addition of all sorts of different regulations and programs, and I don't know how much Lady Liberty can handle on her shoulders here before the whole thing comes down.
How do you think your role as a third party candidate plays into that when it comes to either alleviating the gridlock or, as you said, possibly encouraging that gridlock when it comes to the growth of government or even just the party controls within, say, Congress at the moment, since you're running for the U.S. Senate seat?
We could play a huge role if the American public is ready. We're up against 150 years of ballot access law across the country, put there by Democrats and Republicans. But we do present the choice to people, and each time we overcome those barriers. But it's up to the American people, and more and more people are looking every day. More and more people are registering as libertarians and other third parties or independent, because they see that these two parties is just continuous failure. So I think third parties could play a huge role, and the Libertarian Party has been the third party that has stood the test of time. I think we're part of the social fabric now. The word libertarian is being said a lot more than when I joined the party back in the 70s. So we're encouraged. We are the third party, and when the time comes, I can't tell you it's going to be this time or next time, but when it comes, then we'll be the established party that's organized in all 50 states and ready to take over, and we'll do our best. But up until then, we are blameless. I mean, all the things that are happening today, you certainly couldn't blame the Libertarian Party because they have not shared anything with us, any kind of power.
Could you, just for a quick, for our listeners, just kind of give a quick rundown on what libertarian principles are or what the party stands for?
Yes, we believe in it. Well, it's derived from the word liberty. We want freedom. We want less government. We want a free market economy. We want to get the government out of the economy. We want a strict respect for your civil liberties. We want to get the government out of your personal life. And we want a non-interventionist foreign policy. That means getting our government out of other governments. We would have free trade, so you couldn't call it isolationism by any means. But politically and militarily, we would be strictly neutral and not get involved in all these wars of aggression. So it means less government and more personal freedom. We believe in things like self-ownership. You know, you own your life. You have the right to live any way you want as long as you don't infringe on somebody else's right to do the same. There are some core principles, and it's deep. It's individual rights. It's property rights. It's capitalism, you know, free markets. So, but we, you know, if it comes right down to it, we want less government, less taxes, more personal freedom.
All right. So coming back to our second question, this is coming back to more of an Alaska-specific thing. Here in the state, there's been considerable focus on balancing both resource development of extractive industries with environmental concerns. What are your guiding principles when weighing in on this topic?
Well, again, one of our principles is a deep respect for private property. And currently, of course, the government, between state and federal, owns most of the land, and native corporations were given about 12%, and then less than 1%, I think, is owned by individuals. And so what I favor is private ownership of the land. And not only is that going to stop everybody from battling over these resources, I mean, sometimes it tips left, and the environmentalists are happy, and sometimes it tips right, and then the resource extraction folks are happy. At that moment. But in the end, nobody's really happy. And if it was privately owned, then it wouldn't be my business if the person or people who own ANWR opened that up. Or, you know, just we wouldn't be at each other's throats.
How would that relate when it comes to zoning laws?
Zoning is a dirty word to us. We don't think, I mean, if you own your property and you haven't used any force or any fraud, then you have the right to do with your property as you will. Now, you know, there are limits to that, physical limits. You can't pollute your property, because if you do, it's going to seep onto somebody else's property, and then you've committed trespass, and we don't take too kindly to that. But in the end...
Would that also tie in with somebody that builds a 5-story building next to a smaller plot of land? I'm not totally familiar when it comes to libertarian zoning principles.
Well, you could look at Houston. I think Houston has gotten along for a long time without zoning laws. And in the end, if I move in there and I want to build a 5-story building, unless I've signed some sort of covenant with some sort of, you know, association beforehand, I get to do what I want, and a lot of that's going on in Mountain View, or at least some of that. They've built some really nice homes, but the homes also, you know, affect other people. Now, you know, that's just the way it is. If you don't like it, you know, move. But we're going to respect property rights. We're going to try that. It's going to be a different orientation. Instead of focusing on the common good, we would like to focus on the individual good. And we think that that's going to end up being better for the common good, if there is such a thing.
So how would something like the Department of Natural Resources and EPA tie into that idea of the personal good rather than the common good when it comes to guiding resource development, especially in mining practices? You mentioned ANWR.
Well, we have to decide what the commons are going to be. Is it going to be 99% of Alaska? Or is it going to be the reverse and 1%? And then you wouldn't need to see as much of the DNR and the EPA, because it's going to be privately owned. And if a crime is committed, then we're going to have courts, we're going to have police, we're going to have a national defense, we're going to have a legislature, and these things can be adjudicated. But we're not going to be, you know, as I understand it, the people in Eagle, I'm sorry, in Chicken and that whole area need to be looking for an alternative, because the EPA has become very heavy-handed up there, and probably elsewhere too. They just have the guts to say something about it. And so I just figure that we won't really need those agencies if the land is privately owned.
All right. Moving on to our third question. Edward J. Snowden's actions have led to a widespread discussion about another balance, this one being between privacy and security, which we've also touched on already. The often overlooked aspect of the Snowden affair is the role of media in reporting about or deferring to government activities. What are your guiding principles when weighing in on this topic? So we have kind of a two-part here with the role of media as well as the balance between privacy and security.
Well, my guiding principles are the Bill of Rights. You know, I would love to see more investigative journalism. In fact, Radio Free Palmer is doing a bit of it today, because even by covering the third-party candidates, you're doing more than most quote-unquote media. And again, libertarians don't really view things as races or classes or groups like the media. We tend to view the world as individuals, and so you can't judge one media person by another. Still, we'd like to see more investigative journalism instead of the go-along and get-along. And in terms of Snowden and other whistleblowers, I'd have to take a stand and say that they're heroes. And they exposed a duplicitous, wild beast, a murderous beast. And so...
What are you referring to when you say beast?
I'm referring to the acts of the United States government against other people and people in our own nation. And these gentlemen exposed that. And we needed to see that. It's like the Pentagon Papers. It's that big. It turned people, if there was anybody left who was in favor of these wars, it turned them against them. And we lost those wars. And like Vietnam, we deserve to lose those wars, because we were the aggressor. And
are you referring to Iraq and Afghanistan, or which wars are you referring to?
And Vietnam.
Vietnam.
And in some ways, I think the only war that's ever been justified in this country, for this country, was the revolution. Everything after that, I'm not so sure. But lately, it's a system. And the system is, like I said, hundreds of years old, 150 years old, something like that. And it's not going to change overnight, so the third parties will keep plugging. But this system commits these acts, and they wasted trillions of dollars, and they, or you know, at least a trillion on these latest wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and wasted millions of lives. Your time is your life, and they wasted that. And you know, they could have gone after the September 11th criminals with Interpol. They could have tracked these folks down as individuals, but we took a dangerous turn and started using collective punishment and killed how many people, hundreds of thousands of people and animals and all the rest, and laid low these countries.
How would you respond to people that say that this was an act of security by the U.S.?
Security. Yeah, that's like turning the War Department into the Defense Department. Security is not having your knife at everybody's throat with the CIA and the FBI and the secret police. Security is a free society that shows it is truly neutral and not involved in any of these. We're not backing Israel, and we're out of NATO, we're out of CETO, we're strictly neutral. And if we can show the world that and maybe throw an apology out there, then maybe we can get along. In today's world, where Twitter, had a big influence on what happened in Egypt, You know, we don't need secret police. And in a free society, you don't have secret police.
So when it comes to this, obviously, this idea of protecting privacy, what sort of things what would you do in Congress? What would you do from a U.S. Senate seat to really move forward those privacy concerns and either reduce the wiretapping on American citizens or whatnot?
We would work to abolish the FBI, the CIA, the NSA. This violation of the Fourth Amendment, this illegal search of people's private records without a warrant is illegal, and it would go everything from that to what you hear about every day now, and it somehow desensitizes everybody, all the way down to Selective Service Registration. The Selective Service Registration of 18-year-olds for a potential draft goes on and on and on every day. Perhaps you've heard the public service announcement.
In order to be able to register to vote as well.
I hear so many more to register young men for the draft than I ever hear to register to vote.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. And I pay attention to that because that is just a waste, and it's potentially setting up, you know, a draft, which is the end of civil liberties for, you know, half of the young population, and probably everybody now. They'll make it fair. If they will try, they'll never make it fair. But anyway, so as a senator, I would work to roll back the government. I mean, in terms of, you know, again, we want a core government. We want maybe 5 to 10% of the government we have now.
Going back to that original theme of how do you work with others, how would you work with the main two parties that are currently in Congress?
We would work to build coalitions. You know, there are people in both parties who think as we think on certain issues, and until we have a majority, then we would have to work to build coalitions. But you see, it has to start somewhere. And Alaska is a better place than to start and make a statement and deliver a significant vote to the libertarians and try to wake some people up. As I said, more and more people are waking up every day, but still not enough, as you can tell from the polls, to make a big splash and let people know that there is an alternative.
When you mentioned this, rolling back a bit from before, when you mentioned working with Yes On To, the legalizing marijuana in Alaska, do you see that as a privacy concern? Or, I mean, when some people would say that this is something that you're legalizing a drug?
You know, as a professional, it was my job to put it on the ballot. And so I heard all the different reasons why we should, and a lot of the reasons why we shouldn't. And, you know, privacy is, in Alaska, we have the right to privacy. This is going to reinforce our Raven rights in that direction. This Prop 2 is going to make it so that we can clarify our medical issue, because, of course, we have medical marijuana, but you can't buy it anywhere. And so it's going to fix that. And it's going to institute a transportation clause, which is going to allow us to move the product around.
Is this a commerce clause?
Yes. And so it's important that we take this step. And I believe in that. And so it made it even easier to struggle through the winter to get those signatures. But I just wanted to point that out as an example of how we can work with a lot of different people, because I think the numbers are showing a majority now who believe in Yes On To, and putting that together is, and being part of it, I should say, is not easy, and anyone will tell you that, but it can be done.
All right. Moving along to our last question. The Supreme Court has recently taken stands that seem to put corporations above individuals. In Alaska, that may be one aspect of the discussion of the role oil companies play in our owner state. How do you view corporations?
Okay, well, that's there's a lot in there. And first of all, I'll say the Supreme Court decision, you know, it encourages me because my money is my speech.
And you're referring to the Citizens United Supreme Court decision?
Right. Right. You know, I've always said that my money is my speech, and I'll again refer your listeners to the Bill of Rights. My speech should not be limited. And I'm not a wealthy man by any stretch, but I don't take too kindly to when people try to limit my speech. I should be able to give as much as I want to whoever I want. And
even when that free speech in the form of money potentially has the effect of changing policy decisions when it comes to what Congress is able to make when it comes to, say, the oil companies. And currently, right now, we have Proposition 1 or Senate Bill 21 that's on the ballot as well when it comes to oil taxes. Is that when it comes to money equal free speech, is there a difference between the power dynamic between someone that has $1 billion versus someone who only has a dollar?
Well, you know, money isn't everything. You know, ask Ross Perot. Ask some of these folks who had deep pockets, who were unlimited, but they still couldn't get what they wanted. I have, you know, I don't want to say it's just a matter of faith in the American public and the American voter. I believe they're intelligent, but I believe that peaceful people should be allowed to travel freely when it comes to the immigration issue. And that works both ways. I shouldn't be hassled when I leave the country. If I ever left the country with more than 10,000 or 3,000 or whatever it is now, the hassle works both ways. I also think that money should be allowed to move freely. And that, because I don't like to see everything, I don't like to see the clamp down. I really don't. I want to see freedom. That's what I'm...
What are you referring to when you say the clamp down?
Campaign finance laws.
Oh, okay.
Where only the most professional and well-financed groups will be able to participate in the democratic process, because you have to have paid treasurers to handle all these regulations. And that's another way they keep third parties out. You know, so, you know, you may think, well, sure, it's all high and mighty and noble to track all this money and make sure that we limit this money and that everybody has this equal, you know, playing field in those terms. But in the end, you limit your choices to only those who set those laws. You know, they didn't set them up to make it easier for everybody. They set them up to make it tougher for everybody else. So, you know, if we could just keep it free, like the AMA, they're basically a union for the doctors that has the Congress under their control, so that doctors are not allowed to advertise their prices. There is no free speech there. And if we had that free speech there with the competition that would result, then you'd see the prices go down. But that's not what the union wants there. That's not what the AMA wants. They want set profits and set markets. So, and again, free speech, it all comes back to free speech and the Bill of Rights. And if we stick with that, I think everybody's going to be better off.
Does there also need to be oversight? Or are people, is it left up to themselves to make good judgment calls?
Yes, there needs to be oversight. But by who? I mean, I should be able to pick up a copy of Consumer Reports and find out who the corrupt people are. And who you pick up any newspaper and you got to figure it out for yourself. You know, buyer beware. Keep, you know, pay attention. But in terms of whether we're going to have everything go through the funnel of the Federal Election Commission or the bottleneck of AIPOC here in Alaska, you know, I follow the rules, but I don't agree with the rules, and I don't agree with those agencies, and I think we should get along without them. We used to get along without them, but it doesn't seem to be getting any better to give the government more power. And
So jumping on to that question, with the recent Hobby Lobby case, how do you interpret that one?
I like it. I like it because even though I'm pro-choice and I don't believe you can regulate a real life for a potential life, so I'm pro-choice. And I think that if on my property, you know, if I wanted to be pro-choice and not hire pro-life people, I should be allowed to do that. And the reverse is true. If somebody doesn't want to hire pro-choice people on their property, you know, that's fine, and they certainly shouldn't be forced to provide anything that goes against their principles.
A lot of people would say that this isn't a pro-choice argument, that it's a privacy argument, that these women are accessing birth control and equal and equitable access to birth control, no matter where they work.
I want it legal, and I want it available. But I don't think the taxpayer should pay for it, and I don't think anybody who's opposed to it should have to pay for it.
That I understand that as well, but these women are also paying their insurance premiums, just like you and I would pay our insurance premiums. Doesn't that mean that they're also paying for it?
Well, it depends on the insurance companies. That would be a matter between them and their insurance companies. And if the Hobby Lobby or any other business doesn't want to work with insurance companies that cover that, that would be their right because, again, we go back to property rights. I don't believe black people should have to serve white people. You know, I don't believe Jewish people should have to hire Nazis. You know, I don't believe, you know, that...
Aren't you talking about a bit of a slippery slope when it comes to not having the oversight of things like equal protection laws?
That's what I'm talking about because, again, I don't think that gays should have to rent to straights. You know, I mean, I believe in property rights, and you should be allowed to do anything you want with you and your justly acquired property as long as you don't infringe on somebody else's right. So I'm not here to defend any kind of negative behavior. It'll happen in a free society, but we're not going to, you know, you talk about privacy. We will protect people's privacy, and that's serious business for us. But getting back to the question about corporations, I mean, I also want to say that I like business people. I like, you know, my dad was a businessman, and I like everything about business people. What I don't like about corporations is, and then so I don't really have anything wrong with things like McDonald's or Harley Davidson or Microsoft. You know, they deliver a good product at a fair price. I have no problem with that. But corporations do present a problem when they get things like limited liability. Limited liability, I like that about as much as I like sovereign immunity, you know, where the government claims complete immunity for anything they do out there, you know, which I hate. And I don't like limited liability because I think people who commit crimes should pay for those crimes. So do I worry about corporations? Again, there is no such thing as corporations. There are individual companies that have become incorporated, and you can't judge one by another. And so we have to get into that. So I'm not going to just make a blanket statement that I don't like corporations. I worry about some aspects of it. And so and as far as the owner state goes, I'm completely against the idea of the owner state. I think it's laughable when they say it's our oil, and then they throw everybody a $1,400 check, which I've never taken. I've never accepted the permanent fund. I don't agree with the system. I think it should be privately owned. It's the only way we'll survive up here. Otherwise, we're just a warehouse for resource extraction.
And all right. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up there. We're running out of time. Thank you for joining us today. And listeners are really going to enjoy hearing what you've had to say. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Anytime, Kenny.
All right. Thank you so much.